The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
The Five Finger Death Punch fans should stop fucking crying over leaving. Or I don't know if he's leaving or not.
No, he said he was going to leave. That he said he wasn't going to leave. He's going to do his side project. His Five Finger Death Punch is so important to him. Wah.
Hashtag who cares?
Welcome to the Necrocasticon.
You want to know a fun fact? Max actually used the term sarcophagus in one of his wrestling promos years ago.
We had a song in a band of mine at one point called Sarcophagus, and we tried doing some etymology on the word and broke it down to sacra and phage, basically sacred mouth, and then we ended up changing the song title to vagina as a result.
Welcome to Volume 2, Chapter 50 of the Necrocasticon, Project Entertainment Network's podcast that blends horror and heavy metal properties with the common connection. I'm your host, writer, and podcaster, Toki Tom Clark, and with me, as always, is our panel of horror and metal experts at Project Entertainment Network. Once upon a midnight dreary, I happened upon musician Max X.
No, it wasn't me, it was my twin.
I heard him rapping on my chamber door. Superfan smoking well, Hades. Okay, I don't know.
You said rapping, not fapping.
And screaming nothing
Waltz
more.
Waltz up in your window right now, just fapping off.
And screaming.
That man mail.
Nothing more, nothing more. Musician and artist, Azrael Mordecai.
And may or may not die face down in a gutter on my birthday drunk.
We all have to have goals.
Yes. We're getting poetic this week and digging up into the creepiness that was Edgar Allan Poe. Or more specifically, his opus, Murder in the Rue Morgue, a classic tale of horror, intrigue, and murder. The tale has inspired filmmakers and musicians alike, from Vincent Price to Iron Maiden.
Yeah. Quick debate, though. Really? You think that's his opus?
It's an opus.
Or Pit in the Pendulum?
Well, we're going to discuss
him. Castle of Amontillado?
We're going to... I didn't say magnum opus. I just said opus. Okay.
Magnum. You've been talking to the wife, haven't you?
Hell, the Ravens made it on The Simpsons. Therefore,
yes.
It's number one.
Well, join us, won't you, as we dig up the remains of Edgar Allan Poe. But that's not all. Walt reviews Night Demon's latest effort. What's the name of that album, Walter?
Darkness Remains.
Yes, and I'll tell you, if you should bother reading Christopher Golden's newest adventure into horror, Ararat, I'll get a little spoiler, they find Noah's Ark. Shh. And Oz destroys some divinity in the mortuary. Thus, Max gives the axe to another sorry son of a bitch this week. And it's a well-deserving sorry son of a bitch, too. Oh, yeah. All right, but this is the point where we're going to remind you that you can sponsor the Necrocasticon, can't you, Max?
Absolutely. You can go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the advertising banner, and you can sponsor us just like our friends at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Hey, Necrocaster fans, looking for something out of the box to wear? Then visit subculturecorsets.com. Subculture Corsets and Clothing carries all the unusual clothing and accessory brands for the steampunk, gothic, apocalypse, rockabilly, and pinup scenes. Or perhaps you're into the Victorian goth. Whatever you freaks are into, most likely Subculture Corsets and Clothing will have something for you. If you're a curvy lady, Subculture offers sizes 4 through 4X and men's clothing as well, so no excuses. Visit subculturecorsets.com now for the new exciting piece. Or visit their store at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located a half mile off Interstate I-95. When checking out at Subculture's website, use the discount code NECROCASTICON for 10% off your entire order. That's subculturecorsets.com, discount code NECROCASTICON. Check them out now.
But another way you can help us out is by going to patreon.com/projectentnet. That's Project E-N-T-N-E-T. And for as little as $1 a month, you can become a patron of the entire Project Entertainment Network. And don't forget to listen to us on all our podcasting outlets. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Roku. We are on the Google app. We are now on iHeartRadio. So please listen to us. Give us a ranking. Give us a rating. Give us a comment. We really would appreciate that. And follow us on all of our social media. Look for Necrocasticon on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yes, I'm at Token_Tom on Twitter, the Token Tom on Facebook. What about you, Max?
Find me on Twitter at TheMaxX.
Walter?
You can find me on the Twitter at YourWaltHades, and you can also find my movie viewing challenge, 365 movies in 365 days, just by entering that in the Facebook search engine. Go ahead, like it.
Azriel.
Find me on Facebook, Twitter, DeviantArt, Elo, and all those other kind of places by looking for Ghoulish Art or Azriel Mordecai.
Edgar Allan Poe. The reason that I wanted to talk about Edgar Allan Poe this week, guys, is because we're at a point in history where the publishing world has changed. And with that is people's tastes have changed and what they want for their fiction has changed. And one of the things that Edgar Allan Poe did is he kind of created the detective fiction genre, especially as we know it today. People like
the case has been said that he pretty much created modern American fiction.
Yes. You know, like John Sanford's Prey novels and stuff like that. Those are direct Edgar Allan Poe, as are the Lincoln, Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, Pendergrass books. They're just as much Poe as they are, Sherlock Holmes and Arthur Conan Doyle.
H.P. Lovecraft used a lot of Poe elements in his stories as well.
Absolutely, he did. And quite often you'll find that a modern horror author will have a second career as either a romance writer or as a crime fiction writer. Because crime fiction and genre and noir fiction with private detectives and whatnot is very popular. Very popular. And the only thing that separates, you know, hardcore violent horror from that, anyway, is the supernatural element, as we've discussed before on this show. So, talking about Edgar Allan Poe is very important, and especially Murder on the Rue Morgue, because that, beside all his other, because everything else, I think, when you look at The Raven, for example, it becomes cliche. It's so embedded into pop culture. It's become a mockery of itself.
Parody.
A parody of itself. Mm-hmm. And Murder in the Rue Morgue is slightly different than that because it's not so ingrained into pop culture.
You would think differently considering that it's considered the first actual detective story.
Yeah, you'd think, but it's not because it's like Edgar Rice Burroughs inspiring Star Wars and Dune with John Carter, for example. It's the same thing.
Maybe because the payoff in Murders in the Rue Morgue is kind of, I don't know.
Kind of a letdown.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It is a letdown. Yeah. Yeah.
Spoilers. It's a fucking monkey.
Sorry.
Yeah, spoilers.
Orango Tango did it.
Right.
It was a red-ass orangutan.
Leave the president out of this.
Beta 1.
Well, you know, that's what it was in the story. But in the movie adaption, you do get one movie with the monkey in it.
Right.
But not every adaption's had the monkey in it.
Ook, ook.
Ook, ook. It is the original giant purple hairy gorilla joke, without a doubt. You know,
so this episode is about Yum Yum Gorilla.
About Harambe.
Oh! I thought we could get through this entire fucking decades of this show without ever saying Harambe on this one.
That was this guy right here.
Yeah, motherfucker.
That's where it all started. That's where blame Edgar Allan Poe for that. It's his fault. He implanted the fear of orangutans and fucking monkeys and gorillas in the people's conscious, and that's what happens.
Well, Harambe was a silverback, so it might have been Mark Henry's fault.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
He's got to talk to his peeps and get him in order.
Well, wasn't the silverback also? Wasn't that Ryback's name beforehand in the Indies?
Wrong show.
Yeah.
No. I picture Lesnar as more of a silverback myself.
I'm not even on that show when I started this one.
I start with
Lesnar looks like the yellow gorilla.
Yes, he does. Great babe. Sorry, back to the monkey.
Lesnar looks like Charlie 27 from the Guardians of the Galaxy.
The other thing about this, too, is that, you know, Murders in the Rue Morgue basically establishes the Inspector Clouseau character that comes along later on in life. Without Murders in the Rue Morgue, we never would have had that. Just for example, that tells you how ingrained into everything that we've done that this is, that we've forgotten it. It's like everybody, like I was trying to say earlier with Edgar Rice Burroughs, everybody forgot him. They didn't realize that that was first. And by now, you're making a movie about it, it's not going to matter. Everybody's not going to care because it's all part of society already. And that's one thing about this story, and it's why it's often overlooked. It's because it's already part of everything. It's the hero. It's a version like Star Wars is the same story that's been told again and again and again and again and again and again. That's what this is. Murders in the Rue Morgue is a story that's been told again and again and again and again and again and again and again.
It's a template.
The problem with it is that it's seldom told in a sort of like Island of Dr. Moreau, where they don't tell the story the way it was written, and then you have these kind of half-assed reinterpretations. Like Van Helsing, they blamed it on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know what I mean? It's one of these things where people are getting a distorted perception of the original story because so few people have actually seen or read the original story.
Mm-hmm. The first
sort of like show people a picture of the historical Dracula. You know, they'll be like, well, Dracula didn't have a beard and big bushy eyebrows. Well, yes, he did. If you read the fucking book, he did.
Yeah, he was kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he was a fucking Carpathian fucking warrior. You picture that image in your head. That's what he was. You know, he was closer to the only close interpretation I've ever seen is the early scenes from Bram Stoker's Dracula with Gary Oldman, where he's wearing the red armor, the dragon armor. He's got the long hair and the beard, and he looks like Rasputin, essentially. You know, that's kind of the image that you should have. And that's the same goes for Murders in the Rue Morgue, where people have this kind of sanitized, cleaned up, you know, de-hokified kind of version of what it is, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Also keep in mind too, the magazine that I've contributed to in the past, Rue Morgue.
Yep.
just gonna put that out there, you know. It's so ingrained. And again, it's not as cliche as like The Raven would be, because as soon as you know, like I opened up the show today with obvious homage to The Raven, okay? You've said it yourself, Oz. It's made it to the fucking Simpsons. It's became pop culture. And it's become a cliche unto itself again.
It was honestly, that would have probably been the first time I'd heard The Raven would have been on The Simpsons. That was like the first Halloween of the first Treehouse of Horrors episode they did. Literally the very first one. So
yep. It was the last story on the very first Treehouse of Horrors also.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's the one that actually leaves Homer fucking petrified, and all the kids are sitting there like, what, I don't get it. What's so scary? And you know, I can't remember how old I was, but I do remember after seeing it on the show, getting a book of Poe's writing out of the library at school, and that's where my exposure to it comes from. And that's probably a story that can be repeated by many other people, you know, so... on that aspect alone, you know, I think The Simpsons have definitely helped give a new life to Edgar Allan Poe. I think you can blame the rest on Tim Burton kind of stealing his look.
Now, Rue Morgue established, as we said, the template for...
Actually, wasn't there a movie called The Raven with John Cusack that was kind of based on this?
There's been several adaptations of The Raven.
Yeah.
Yep. And Murders in the Rue Morgue itself was played into that movie too, didn't it?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, the one that has the most adaptations is The Black Cat, which has probably been done about 15 or 16 times.
But this also, you know, as I was talking about, you know, we wouldn't have a Inspector Clouseau without this, because this is the story that establishes the bumbling, eccentric, brilliant detective, which
Idiot
is
savant.
Right, which was, you know, basically played off with Sherlock Holmes, who would never have existed if it weren't for this. You can even
and
say
codified
that
codified by the Syracuse Police Department.
Yeah, you could say that Hercule Poirot is off the same thing too. The Agatha Christie yep. detective
Powell.
From
Powell.
Ten Little Indians. Yes.
See, you sanitized it.
We've all sanitized it.
I sanitized before we started tonight.
Now, you know, aside from the monkey business,
really? You're going to give me shit over Harabi and you're going to throw that line in there. Really? Okay, fine. Gloves are off now. Stop monkeying around and get back to the story.
Yes. Aside from the monkey business, you know, it's a fairly straightforward murder mystery. You know, that just happens to be the twist in it.
I just have the problem with the shoving her up the chimney.
It's a pretty strong monkey. What can I say?
Yeah, but really?
Well, let's look at it from the other adaptions, the Vincent Price adaptation. Now, I'm sure that's a movie that's graced your VCR many times, Oz.
Mm-hmm.
What are its elements that bring it and make it stand out as opposed to the written fiction?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm more a fan of those movies because of the behind-the-scenes, sort of how they came about. You know, a lot of them being done kind of... if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the Corman adaptations had one budget, and he just made as many movies as he could till the money ran out.
Right.
And caused a lot of reused sets and stuff like that. So, you know, for me, that's the main appreciation outside of, you know, just Vincent Price, you know, literally chewing the fucking scenery throughout that movie.
Yeah. And the coloring, they're brilliant. The coloring in those movies, that Mask of the Red Death as well, very brilliant coloring, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was definitely, that was Corman trying to make Hammer movies, essentially.
Right.
You know, and you could argue that in a way he actually outdid Hammer in the sense that, you know, he used more obscure properties and created films that, you know, people turn to just as often as they turn to Hammer's films that relied on successful properties like Dracula and Frankenstein. If that line of thinking makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Absolutely does.
You know, Corman gets a lot of crap, but those movies managed to have a sense of gothic atmosphere that, you know, you don't generally see in American productions. Yes, they were filmed overseas, so that probably contributes to that. But also the fact that, you know, these are closer to, like, the Italian films, you know, like the Nashi films, where they'd have these scene, you know, these where the environment is as much of a character as the players, you know. And I think that makes that movie stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't deny that at all. How much exposure did you have to those movies, Walt and Max?
Not too much. I mean, as far as the Rumorg movies, I honestly haven't seen a single one.
Really?
I'm familiar with them, but I never really watched. Yeah.
Really? You've never seen any of the Edgar Allan Poe adaptions?
Oh, well, I have. I've seen, you know, I've seen The Pit and the Pendulum.
That's part of that. That's one of the Corman films.
Yeah. I've seen that one. I've seen... no, I'm talking about the one that came later with Lance Henriksen.
Oh. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It sucked. Yeah. It had boobs in it, but, you know.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. You know, you should never walk away from anything adapted from Edgar Allan Poe going, well, at least it had boobs.
Yeah, that's true. What about
that's
you, Max?
That's generally a good sign that somebody fucked up along the way.
Yeah. I think that was a Charles Band film.
Now,
I think he did direct that one.
What about you, Max? What's your exposure?
First exposure was probably like, oh, God, 6, 7 years old, just being told about some of the stories of Poe, including Murders in the Rue Morgue. Didn't read it or see any of the movie adaptations at that time. through my, you know, schooling and stuff like that in English class, we read stories like The Raven, Telltale Heart, and Pit and the Pendulum, and things like that. Just recently, I think I was talking to different subject. I was checking out the Murder in the Rue Morgue stuff today, and that's where I was like, I started to look at some of the clips from the movies you can see, you know, that are available online, and it's like, that's not the story I remember being told when I was a kid that was involved here. Like, where the hell is this circus coming from? Why is Bela Lugosi doing this in this movie? Why is he acting like that? That's not what this is about.
Right.
And then re-familiarize myself with the story. I'm like, yeah, it took a lot of artistic license here, people. What the hell are you doing? So, and then, of course, you know, go back again to what we'll get into later on with the musical aspect of it, kind of even that is an adaptation,
right,
of the story.
No,
and, but it creates another. I think one of the better adaptations of the story.
The girl that my daughter is named after was a young lady that I met at the public library, and we kind of had a library relationship for a while. We'd actually go out and we'd seek each other out at the library and we'd read shit together and stuff like that. And she was doing a...
Well, your library relationships were a lot different from mine.
So
mine was usually, quick, the librarian's coming, zip me back up.
So Krista is doing a paper for school on Edgar Allan Poe, and in particular, Murder in the Rue Morgue. So I suggest to her, why don't you write the paper on how the original book and its adaptations are different from it. And that's the point, that's how she went with it. And her 3 points, one were the original story, two was the Corman adaptation, and three was Iron Maiden's Murder in the Rue Morgue. Now, it's the first epic Iron Maiden song, considered by some, on the first album.
I think I was on Killers.
Oh, you're right.
Second album.
Excuse me. It's just, it's okay. It's the second epic song. Their first epic song being Phantom of the Opera. Okay. That's right. I got them backwards. Walter, thank you for fixing that. Okay. But here's where it's different than Phantom of the Opera. And that's a song that we've talked about on this show before too. With its, you know, beautiful orchestration and timing changes and whatnot. And here's where...
I still did it, too.
Yes, I sure did it, too. But here's where the Murders in the Rue Morgue from Iron Maiden is different than the rest, is that the story is actually a good story. They tell a good story. They've adapted it again. It's an adaptation. There's no fucking monkey in it.
Thankfully, yep.
But it is a very ambiguous ending where and you don't know if the... antagonist of the story is actually the murderer. Even though he's being chased for being the murderer, it comes to the point where he finally, even if he isn't, he thinks he is. Mm-hmm. And that's what's terrifying about the story in this song, is that by the end of it, this guy who is most likely innocent, and because he's being chased, he finally says, fuck it, I'm guilty.
I did it.
Yep.
Even the lyrics about, you know, as I'm walking along, I see all these people staring at me, and I'm thinking that they think I know, they think that I'm the guy who did it. Now I'm thinking, oh my God, did I really do it? What a mind screw. A mind screw it is.
Yep. It's beautifully written. And that's just the lyrics. The music for that song is just as intricate as Phantom of the Opera.
Especially with that. The bass interlude at the beginning underneath the guitars that Steve is doing is so fucking beautiful. And then the drums kick in and it's boom, full on in your face. Love it.
Now as a bass player, because the song is primarily a bass-driven song, what is it about the song that appeals to you in its orchestration?
But just like you said, because Steve Harris, you know, is primarily the brains, if you will, behind the fingers, behind the music of the band, he's always very bass oriented. And like I just said there, at the beginning of the song just has the guitars going there very lightly, very delicate, but the bass had this beautiful interlude going on underneath it, just kind of weaving back and forth between the harmony and the melody. And then just everyone lays out, drums kick in, and then we're full on into it. It just goes like that locomotive there. So just because of the way Steve probably thought as a bass player writing the song is why it's orchestrated that way. And, of course, definitely speaks to me.
Now, you're a musician as well, Oz. The song, Phantom of the Opera, how does it appeal to you in that manner?
Well, you know, being a bass player, anything from Iron Maiden has an appeal because, you know, it's all very rhythm oriented. As Max pointed out, you know, Steve Harris is the bass player. So the songs are going to be written from a very rhythm centric sort of view. With Iron Maiden, though, the advantage is that you also have a bunch of other talented musicians who make it seem more than a rhythm-heavy song. You know, you can look at bands like Clutch if you just want a band that has a lot of rhythm and very little, theory, technical playing sort of stuff. Iron Maiden, on the other hand, you know, it's always a very driving, intense. There's never a point where the bass line in a Maiden song seems to be filler, seems to be duplicating something that somebody else is doing. It's always its own thing. So that, to me, is the reason that, you know, really any Maiden song, you could pick any song, the exception of anything that Paul Di'Anno sung on, which I'm not really a big fan of.
Well, he's saying this one.
He's saying on this, yeah.
Well, that's why I'm talking in more general terms, because, you know, this is the album that I'm probably the least familiar with. Those are the songs to me that, I enjoy. As a bass player, I'll gravitate towards them because there's a lot of chunkiness going on. There's a lot to follow. There's a lot to enjoy as a bass player, or I can focus on the guitar work or, Bruce Dickinson's fucking voice, which is always, always phenomenal.
The dynamics in the song, too, are very diverse. It opens up kind of mellow and then just turns into a straightforward gallop fest.
Well, most Maiden songs, have that sort of duality to them. You know, my example is the song Sign of the Cross, which Blaze sung on, not a great album, that X Factor album, but that song is fucking phenomenal. And it starts out with this little bass lick, and then you hear like this kind of monkish chanting, and then it just gets progressively heavier as the song goes on. And it does create this kind of bookend at the end where it goes back to the chanting and the bass. And that's something that I think Maiden has always been able to do, is have that dynamic where they can be heavy, they can be melodic. They can be a metal band as much as they can sound like, like a symphonic sort of, I can't even put. Yeah. Yeah. It always seemed funny to me that Steve Harris has never tried to write like a Broadway play or something like that, because he really does have that kind of aesthetic to the way he writes. And it's even funnier that he, like myself, can't read sheet music. He just plays, and I respect that and appreciate it to no end, because they're spoken of in the same kind of circles as like Rush and stuff like that, in terms of how difficult and complex it is to play their stuff, So to have, a self-trained or, theoretically ignorant fucking person, or however you want to say it, having those kind of accolades, to me, that's worthy of respect. There's also the fact that the I've always called them the thinking man's metal band, because, they're the ones that completely destroy that whole, metalheads or morons sort of thing. It's like, listen to Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. You tell me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, this goes full circle now, because now it takes us back to Poe himself, who wrote in a style that is difficult to write in. His prose is often duplicated, but never quite replicated the proper way, if you know what I mean. Often copied, but you know.
The adaptation we just talked about. Another example of adaptation comes directly from this song, from Murders in the Rue Morgue. There's a phrase in there, a riff, where it's kind of a ascending riff. You can listen to a song from a band called The Gathering, called Leaves, and Walt and I know this song very well. Yes. There is an exact replica. I don't want to call it a ripoff, a homage, if you will, but it is exactly the same progression, same note progression, not necessarily chord, but it's the same phrasing that they use in that song that is used in Murder in the Rue Morgue. You can put them side by side, literally listen to it side by side. It is the exact same notes in the exact same timing. So yes. Again, another adaptation. It's not like they're stealing or anything like that. I don't want anybody to think that that's what they're doing.
But very different song.
That's the influence. Different song. But that's the difference and the influence of a band like Iron Maiden can give to another band, like Poe did to all these other artists and authors.
Yeah, absolutely. And Poe, one of the most influential of all time. And that makes the detective novel an American thing. Think about
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as you look at the Sherlock Holmes and the Hercule Poirot's, which came out of the United Kingdom, it all started over here. Mm-hmm. And hashtag, we're going to talk about that again a little bit more later when I talk about my review of Ararat. And we'll be talking more about Maiden, too, when we talk about Night Demon. So why don't we take a brief break here, check out some of the other podcasts over at the network. And when we come back, I don't know, we'll dig into some of that shit.
Scribbler's Rest. Do you pop D20s like candy? Do you bleed D6s? Then Scribbler's Rest is your fix. Do some time with a crew of authors, artists, and other nefarious types. We have a case of dues in the fridge, and plenty of magic missiles to unload into your darkness. Slide us in your ear hole and let us work our magic. Feel our vibes every Thursday on the Project Entertainment Network.
This is Joe Lansdale, and you're listening to the Necro Casticon.
May I have your attention for the morning announcement? Please be advised the Lunch Ladies Book Club is coming to Project Entertainment Network. Join Shelley, Mimsy, and Ashley as they dish out a deep review of a book. Horror. Thrillers. Whatever they want to read and review. A blonde, a brunette, and a redhead walk into a bookstore and they're serving up hot book reviews. The Lunch Ladies Book Club, coming soon, exclusively on Project Entertainment Network. Would you now stand for the national anthem?
Don't get your lunch money stolen!
Hey, Walter, what you got cooking in the smoker, Walter? What you making for us in the smoker this week, Walter? Did you put your spices on it, Walter? How long you got it in the smoker for, Walter? Should we eat it, Walter?
Uber Fanboy Reviews from...
Hey, Walter!
So, Walter, a new album came out on Friday.
That it did.
It did, and that you know what, did. Malta? It's fucking good, Walter.
It is. It's a very good album. No sophomore slump here. Darkness Remains, the second album from the very first Necrocasticon album of the year. Well, one of the albums of the year. It was up there. It was definitely up there. Our good friends at Night Demon. Mm-hmm. I want to say this album is on par with the debut, maybe just a little bit better. Reason being, Jarvis and the gang have matured a little bit. You know, it's been a couple of years. I feel their chops are a little bit tighter. The Maiden influence is definitely drawn into this.
There's a huge Maiden influence on this album.
Yep.
Oh, Oh, what is that one song?
Third track. Maiden Hell.
There's another track on there. I think it's
Flight of the Manticore. Flight of the Manticore.
It's got that. Yeah. Yes. Flight of the Manticore. And there's another one called Dawn Rider, which is the opposite of what you get with Knight Rider. But that's got that little Steve Harris, galloping on that one. And then in terms of the bass line.
Yeah.
Just a very solid put together album. The main influence is there, too. You get a little bit of Scorpions and Judas Priest are in there. Metallica, of course. You know, there's a very strong new wave of British heavy metal, which in turn Metallica was influenced by. I even picked up some Halloween in this record. A little bit of power metal going on.
They are a power trio.
Yep, they are. The vocals are a lot stronger now, almost to the level of power metal. I listened to the deluxe edition, which includes two bonus tracks, and they are covers.
Yeah.
Now, me, for I fucking hate covers. I'm not a very big fan of covers, especially metal covers of modern day music. Fuck that shit. I hate it. But these two covers are right up our alley. The first one is Turn Up the Night, Black Sabbath, Mob Rules.
Yep.
And that's a fantastic cover. But the one that really, like, you know, that made me stand up and cheer was their cover We Will Rock You. But
yes!
it's not the version everybody at the basketball game goes along with. It's the one off the Live Killers, the fast one. The fast version with that's all guitar in it, and it's fucking fantastic.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. I played that at my gig on Friday night. Everybody was like,
"Oh yeah,
my God, this is the best version I've ever heard of this song."
Say you're funny. Everybody looks at you funny. Here's the thing: you want to test somebody on their fandom of Queen? Bring up that version. If they look confused, you got to educate them.
They're not going to know it. Yep.
They're not going to know it. Okay. They say they're a huge Queen fan. Bring that up. But very solid album. How many really good albums have I enjoyed this year? This is probably about three or four now. I think we're up to. This one goes right up here with the Annihilator album, which was not Annihilator. Creator. I'm sorry.
Creator.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
This one goes right up here with Creator. This also right there with the Mastodon album, which Tom, from what I understand, you finally gave a listen to.
Oh, I've been listening to it pretty much lately.
It's pretty goddamn good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good. But I stopped listening to it on Friday when I got my demon.
Yeah. I'm probably going to stop listening to Night Demon next week when Life of Agony comes out, because that's going to be our next review.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, too. So,
But in the meantime, Darkness Remains, if you have not picked... If you are a fan of metal, if you are passionate about heavy metal, true raw metal... This is where you go. This is your go-to point. If you're a fan of Metallica, Judas Priest, Halloween, Scorpions, Merciful Fate, King Diamond, this is where you go. The best way I can describe this band is they would be perfect for the closing credits for a slasher film.
And their video.
Yeah. Yes. Welcome to the Night video.
Welcome to the Night.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Guys are horror fans. You can tell through their influence, definitely.
Absolutely.
There's another song on there, and I got to ask Jarvis when we have him on the show. There's a song on there called On Our Own. That has got to be inspired by that Linda Blair movie, Savage Streets.
Who knows?
Listen to it. You're familiar with that movie, right?
Nope.
I'm familiar with a scene in that movie.
Well, yeah, there's boobs, but... You
know. Once again, we go back to boobs.
Hey, boobies! We like boobies. Not to be misogynistic. Mm-hmm. Because boobies need...
No, not at all.
We respect the boobies. Yes, we do.
Yep.
Yes. So, crossover appeal of this album.
Crossover appeal? I don't know. We got a lot of people who say they love Metallica, but then when you put other thrash metal on, they kind of get turned off. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of straightforward metal, you will like this record. If you're a fan of radio metal... I mean, if you like Disturbed and Avenged Sevenfold, I don't know. I mean, it might be a little tougher for you to swallow because you're not really seasoned yet. Not to be a dick, but hey, you know, if you straight up like metal, pick this record up, okay? If you don't like metal, fuck you. Don't listen to it. If you say you like metal and you won't pick this record up, you're a fucking poser.
Okay, there we go. All right,
there you go.
So Tuesday, Christopher Golden. Now, full disclosure here. I edit and produce on the back end the very popular podcast, Three Guys with Beards. I did not start out as the editor or producer of this show. No. It was dropped into my lap last year. I graciously accepted the chance because it was an opportunity to work with three brilliant writers, James A. Moore, Jonathan Mayberry, and Christopher Golden. Okay. I have never read anything in print from Christopher Golden except his comic books with Mike Mignola until this past week. Ararat, new novel that's come out. horror, there's this other trend of not just like we talked about earlier, of horror writers writing crime fiction. They are also writing adventure thrillers in the Clive Cussler vein, but with a little bit of a supernatural twist at the end, okay? And that's what Ararat is. It's another one of these. It's like Brian Keene's Pressure from last year. The beauty of this new genre of fiction that's out there is that it's allowing some really hardcore horror writers to show off their chops. It's kind of like comedians doing serious fiction, serious acting, you know? Tantamount to that. This book does not fuck around. From the minute you open it, you're expecting them to find Noah's Ark, and you find it right in the beginning of the book. And it's the other H.P. Lovecraft shit that comes afterwards. That's fucking awesome. Christopher Golden has knocked it out of the park with this. It's very cinematic. If he hasn't already gotten multiple offers for this to go on the big screen, I'd be surprised. Because it plays out like a perfect movie. Well, Ararat's the mountain where Noah's Ark allegedly crashed down, if you follow that mythology. Okay? And that's what this is basically about. Well, they get in there and they find the remains of the Ark, and they find a sarcophagus. And in the sarcophagus is a cadaver. And said cadaver is not human or anything that's ever been seen on this planet before.
It's Abigail?
Could be. Could be, because people start going crazy and start getting hacked up with axes and thrown off ledges into pits. So I'm not going to go any further than that. We'll just leave it there. Definitely worth the pickup. A great book for you to get for your dad that likes Jack Reacher books, for example. Or anybody that likes, we'll say, like the Clive Cussler, Dirk Pick novels. Anybody that likes Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child novels with Pendergrass.
Stuff you find on your dad's bath, you know, on the toilet in the bathroom.
Yep, this is definitely, definitely a pickup. Now, here's a caveat that I had with this book this week.
A pickup while you're dropping off.
Yes! One of my dedicated followers at my trivia shows, Jessica, was
a
up.
Stalker.
Well, no, not a stalker. Her and her husband and a couple other friends come to my trivia shows.
Oh, okay.
And they come every week, and they don't ever win, but they have fun. That's what matters. They come there to have fun. Well, they went on vacation to Portland, Maine this past week. And coincidentally, Christopher Golden was at a bookstore in Portland, Maine on Wednesday night signing copies of the book. And she graciously went there and got a copy of the book signed for me from Christopher.
Well, that's nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yes. So thank you very much, Jessica. And thank you, Christopher Golden and James A. Moore and Jonathan Mayberry for allowing me to edit your podcast. I appreciate it. Let's head down to the mortuary,
man.
Down
there, man.
Oh, yeah, wow. Oh, man.
And, check it out. It's kind of bright in here.
Yeah, wow.
There's a big mess over there.
Why do I feel like God's fucking staring at me right now?
It's time for Mordecai's Mortuary.
Wait, hold on. This is the first time I've heard something in the mortuary that I want to hear all the way through.
Left to be this alone as each day passes by.
was that? That was pretty good.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Those are some friends of mine from Toms Falls, New Jersey, named Divinity Destroyed. Great band. Unfortunately, I don't believe they're together any longer. But while they were together, they were one of the best unsigned bands that I had ever seen. And I'm not saying that because I know them. I'm saying that because that's a fucking fact. They were just phenomenal all the way around. One of those rare bands that you see where the singer can sing, play keyboards, play guitar, very multi-talented band. Writing music that was very intricate, lots of changes, very unusual and unique style and sound. So I would definitely recommend checking out Eden and Ashes, the album that the song comes from. It is available on YouTube. I do believe it's still available for purchase at some online retailers, and it is definitely worth it. It's a full-length album, and there is not a clunker tune on it. If you like heavy music, there's plenty of it. If you like melody and vocals, I can kind of compare them in that sense to like Fear Factory, where they can do the growly and then they can do the pretty actual singing.
Right.
I'm not saying that they sound like Fear Factory, but they have that ability, which you don't generally see with metal bands. And it's actual singing and growling, not that fucking high-pitched, screamy, emo, fucking pull a hoodie over your head and fucking slit your wrist bullshit. So.
Like Walter right now.
No. He doesn't have it yanked down so it's all tight like Cornholio and shit.
Oh, okay.
No. Now, I am Cornholio.
You had an opportunity to work with this band, but you weren't able to because New Jersey isn't appealing to your palate?
Yeah, that's correct. But we played together several times over the years. I actually trekked all the way down to Jersey to see them in Sayreville, open for Cradle of Filth, and it totally worth it. I'm not a huge Cradle of Filth fan, but to see friends of mine open for them, to also see the 69 Eyes, who are also on that bill, 6 Inches of Blood, it was an amazing show. And I got to see Doro Pesh, which was kind of cool. That was an unexpected bonus. She came out with Danny and did a Warlock tune.
We need. That's the only fucking song she does. Okay.
But to give her credit, man, she's still smoking vocally and physically. I mean, she is a gorgeous woman and hasn't lost anything by any means. And I was actually kind of impressed with Cradle of Filth. Definitely a band I would recommend seeing live, even if you're not a huge fan. The drummer was phenomenal, and I very rarely will be awestricken by a drummer. Carl Kennedy from the Rods is probably the only other drummer that I can think of where I was awestruck by a drum solo. Generally, they're boring. That's when I go for a beer. I'm not a drummer. So, if I can't play bass to it, leave me alone. but they're a phenomenal band. Totally worth checking out. Divinity Destroyed, anyway. Also a band with a unique drummer. They also have a bit of a rivalry going with the Misfits for a little while.
I thought you were going to say he has, like, no arms or something.
Well, the story I heard is that one of the members of Divinity Destroyed punched out the window of one of the guys from the Misfits, his car, just, like, blasted out his window.
Why the fuck would you do that? That's stupid.
Why do you punch out Doyle's? That's scary.
Yeah, I hope it wasn't Doyle.
You got Doyle's bad side.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to break kayfabe. That was actually a publicity stunt. They're actually friends of the Misfits, and this was something that they did, to help get them some YouTube views and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
They're not too far from Lodi, same area. But great bunch of guys. I wish them all luck in whatever they're doing now. And again, totally recommend checking out Eden and Ashes from Divinity Destroyed on YouTube.
All right, now.
Glenn getting punched out was a work, too.
Tom and I are both walking Sure advertisements right now.
Yeah, we are.
Raise your hands if you're sure.
There's my Vigo.
What are your guys' thoughts, having heard these tracks?
Oh, I liked it. I definitely liked it.
I'm kind of biased, maybe you guys should tell these people whether it's worth listening to or not.
Well, they just fucking heard the song. They should tell them if they should listen to it or not, right there.
I'm going to check out more songs by them. I like it.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
I'll add it to my playlist.
Expert saying he's going to check it out. So
if it's music I can listen to while playing Diablo or Bloodborne, it'll rock.
Oh, by the way, I have arthritic hand now because of WWE 2K17. More to come on this week's Kurt.
That's what you're going to claim anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Left-handed, too.
Uh-huh.
Falls asleep. Anyway.
There's this couple has sued campground near here because they claimed that their cabin gave them bed bugs. Because they got bed bugs, they couldn't have Nookie. Okay?
Okay.
So they're suing for $1 million.
Think of them as an audience.
Okay. The exact wording of the thing says, because the husband could not have relations with the wife, and because the wife could not have relations with the husband. Just saying. Those are the kind of people that you want to fucking cane. Okay? You want to take a fucking axe to them. For example, Max?
Yes, I can actually help you with that because I have an axe to grind, no pun intended, with somebody this week. This guy is just an overall asshole. And that's why he's getting it this week. Wes Scantlin from Puddle of Mud.
Oh, why are we even bringing him up on our show?
Because he deserves this.
Oh, dude.
Not because... Now, this is the point of the segment.
It's like you pissed the dog's anal glands just now.
Find an asshole and cut him with the axe. This guy belongs on the list.
That
not
smells.
Just because his band sucks donkey balls, but just for being an unprofessional dick.
No, their first album's really good. I got you all.
When was that?
Their very first Puddle of Mud.
Was it last century?
I was still friends with this other guy.
The fact of the matter is, this guy, it's bad enough he gets cops called to his house. He misses court dates for whatever reason he wants to. But this guy decided at a recent show to start chewing out his drummer on stage during a song and then walks off.
Again?
Okay. Again.
Yep. It's not the first time he's done this.
Why does anybody even bother to work with this fucking piece of shit anymore?
Do they get paid?
No idea.
No, they don't.
They're not making any money now with this because of this shit. You just screwed all those people from the local insane asylum and developmental programs because that's the fucking people who go to a Puddle of Mud show. I'm sorry to tell you that, folks, but that's where they come from. You just screwed them out of all the money they paid for the tickets. Now, let's make sure we understand this by my tone of my voice. You can tell. Hey. Not a fan of this band, okay? Don't
We've
care
all...
about them at all.
We've all seen the Doors. Towards the end of the Doors movie, they're talking about how people are basically going to see him to see if he dies on stage. That is what people are fucking paying for at this point. They're not going to see a show. They're going to see
the car crash.
The fucking YouTube clip. Exactly. Right. And
keep your phone running, honey. Wes is going to do something.
Mm-hmm. It says something when you can put Wes Scantlin and Scott Stapp in a room together and you walk out going, wow, Scott Stapp's the sane one.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Now, and as Oz just pointed out with the friends there with Divinity Destroyed and the Misfits, kind of working a little angle there, so to speak, I do not picture this guy having the brains to work this angle where he's trying to play the role of a dick. No, he's the dick. The bottom line is, if you are a performer and you are privileged enough to have people leave their homes, drive to a theater or a venue of any kind, pay good money for a ticket to watch you perform, then you give them a show and save your personal shit for after the show. It's as simple as that.
It's a fucking job. And if you look at it like that, if you fucking show up to your job fucking shit-faced or coked out or fucking cracked out or fucking methed out or whatever the fuck this guy's using and fucking berate your fucking customers and then fucking lose your company money, you lose your job. This guy should not be hired by anybody. He shouldn't be booked by anybody. I know they blacklist people still. Why the fuck does this guy keep getting booked?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He plays with Jerry Cantrell. You ready for this? He goes out and tours with fucking Jerry Cantrell and does fucking acoustic Alice in Chains songs with him.
How? Hey,
stay in the background. Stay in the background. I don't care.
Why do Jerry let him go out there? Come on.
Music makes for strange bedfellows. People become friends for whatever reason.
I guess.
And they just have to dismiss their faults, I guess. So because of all this, because of all this angst he has generated this week, because of being an unprofessional dick and somebody that nobody should worry about anymore, Mr. Wes Scandalin, you just got the axe.
All right, okay.
Our asshole of the week.
In 2000, let's just go down because we're not done with this asshole yet. In 2002, he beat up his fiance. In 2012, he got too drunk on an airplane. All right. On 2013, guess what? He dragged his ex-wife and then pulled her by the arm of the shirt. All right. Felony vandalism.
To as the Def Leppard drummer routine.
The one arm bandit, it's called.
Felony vandalism after he used his buzzsaw to destroy property that was on his neighbor's patio.
Yep, there was that.
Mm-hmm. You know what the real irony of it is? Remember the video for Blurry, the storyline for the video for Blurry?
Yeah.
No.
No wonder your fucking kid doesn't see you.
Yeah, that's why.
It sounds like the video. 2015, arrested and charged for disorderly conduct at another airport. Somebody can't fly and drink. Renville County, Minnesota, after he leads deputies on a high-speed chase. Yeah.
I really hate this guy more than I hate Fred Durst.
Yeah.
August 2015.
Fred Durst is banned from countries.
Fred Durst discovered Puddle of Mud. Fred Durst is the guy who got Puddle of Mud signed.
August,
and I have to hate him more because he's fucking responsible.
A month later, he gets another DUI in South Dakota at Sturgis. Okay. 2016.
You have to work to get a DUI at Sturgis.
Yeah, that means something. Oh, was he driving a John Deere tractor? What the fuck?
He tried. 2016, he gets arrested for trespassing and destroying property inside his house that had been foreclosed. Mm-hmm. Okay. 2016, he's arrested by cops following a standoff with 30 armed police officers. Thank God you. How are you still alive? How is this man still breathing? August 2016. He's caught drinking before a flight to Kentucky. Yeah, they don't let him on the fucking plane.
If you were flying to Kentucky when you want to drink, too.
Yeah. And then a week later.
No offense.
Scanlon wired up two cars to try to deter thieves who were breaking into his car. By attaching a radio to the underside of one vehicle with wires leading to the motor, while the second had wires leading to one door to the gas tank. He booby-trapped a fucking car.
You know, and let's just clarify here, folks, anybody listening out there, we're not hating on this guy. We're just telling you the truth. My axe to grind with him was based purely on being unprofessional. And as Tom is looking up all this other information here, hey, nobody here is an angel. We all got situations in our past we don't want to talk about. But this motherfucker deserved it this week.
I don't have anything like that in my past.
You know, Tom, me neither. But, you know, like, I mean, none of us are angels by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, we didn't do this shit.
I think Tom may have been right. I think that the angle he's working here is that he realized a long time ago that he was too stupid to write another fucking album. And now he's just trying to get out of it.
So he's basically the president.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and I went there too.
You know, last week we're all apologetic. You know, Eli Roth the product. Yeah. Two separate things.
Two different things.
Wes Scantlin, you're a dick.
And I'll tell you right now, Kid Rock almost got it this week because him and Nugent with Palin went to the freaking White House this week.
Oh!
And after he was being all anti-authoritative.
That's a porno I don't want to see.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. After him starting his career being all anti-authoritative and I hate the people and I hate the people in charge and blah, 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 and I'm a gangster and whatever the hell else he wanted to try to be that week, he gets invited to the White House and goes. Now, I don't care about your political affiliation. I don't give a shit. You're all a bunch of fucking marks, in my opinion, anyway, for buying into that shit. But fuck you, Kid Rock, for doing that. The only reason I didn't give him the axe is because I know Tom enjoys his live shows.
Yes. So.
And all you lovers of the Nuge, all you guys are like, oh, Uncle Ted, yeah, preach on, brother. Let's not forget two things. One, he married a
17-year-old girl. Yep.
With the permission. And two, he's a fucking draft dodger. While he's going off supporting our troops, he's too chicken shit to go off and do what they did.
Wait, are you talking about Nugent?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, just so we're not spreading incorrect facts here, that has not been proven. I'm not a supporter of Ted Nugent by any means.
All right. He's still an asshole.
Snopes actually. Snopes has said that that's not verifiable.
Okay. All right.
Yuck.
The unreal part is, though.
I'm just referring to the draft.
Say what you will about Ted Nugent.
Allegedly, Trump skid his pants to get out of fucking Vietnam. So.
He had plenty of connections to do that.
Say what you will about Ted Nugent. You can't erase the fact that he is a brilliant musician. And I look at Kid Rock and Donald Trump in the same manner that I look at H.P. Lovecraft. Yep, he was a racist. Yeah. But you know what? He wrote some good stories. Yeah, these guys have political misgivings, and yeah, one of them's a fucking lunatic, okay? And the other one, I don't know, has issues with the size of his penis versus Tommy Lee's.
yeah, but
that's an
case,
issue we all have.
So yeah, exactly. With that being said,
I've never steered a speedboat with my schlong, so yeah, I'm out of that running.
I've never been on a speedboat, and I haven't had the chance to try. So
with that being said,
I feel bad for whoever the fuck's dating Pam Anderson now.
Mm-hmm. I never did.
Swinging a Louisville slugger.
I never did any hard drugs because of Ted Nugent and his Rock Against Drugs PSAs back in the day, talking about how bad crack was.
I'm sorry.
And he was legit. He was legit. He's never drank. Well, he did drink way back, but learned his lesson, never drank again, never did drugs. Even his all-time idol, Jimi Hendrix, handed him drugs, and he said no. I can respect that. That's why Puddle of Mud Guy, Wes Scandalin, your music sucks, you suck, your band sucks. Screw you, you get the axe.
Now, this is the point where I'm going to remind you that you can sponsor the NecroCasticon and the Project Entertainment Network podcast. Just go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the advertising link, and you can learn how to right there. Also, Patreon, if you don't have a business with an internet presence, you want to help us out anyway, you can do so there, www.patreon.com/projectentnet. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can help support our server costs and get free shit in return. We're on all the podcasting outlets you can think of, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, Roku, you name it, we're there. Follow us, like us, subscribe to us. Also, social media, we're the NecroCasticon on Facebook, at NecroCasticon on the Twitter, and NecroCasticon on the Instagram. Follow us at all those places. So, guys, two more chapters left in this volume of the NecroCasticon.
Wow. Volume 3 is upon us.
This volume 3 is coming soon. Coming soon.
Yep, volume 3.
So next week is the final chapter, chapter 51, will be the final chapter of season 3.
Just like Friday 13, part 4. Is this like Friday 13, part 4, final chapter, where there's another few after?
Yeah, there's going to be.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. Just to make sure. But to close out this season next week, we're going to do our final movie commentary of the year. And it's going to be the classic Vincent Price film, The Last Man on Earth, based off of Richard Matheson's incredible novel, I Am Legend. So, novella. Let me rephrase that. So definitely not an episode you want to miss. And for our Patreon subscribers, we're going to provide to you guys the actual video with the overdub so you can watch it as is instead of having to sync.
We do all the work for you that way.
Yeah. So. All right, so that's what it'll be for everybody next week. Then we'll take a week off, and then we'll come back strong with season 3. Wow, or volume 3.
Volume 3, Chapter 1.
Volume 3, Chapter 1, coming soon to a podcasting outlet near you. So
I cannot wait for Volume 3, Chapter 14.
Oh! I mean, what about Volume 3, Chapter 16?
16, yes.
Yes.
That's the one where we just kicked your ass?
Yeah.
Exactly. I can't with that. So Volume 3, Chapter 14, we have to find something to do with pie.
Yes.
And then Volume 3, Chapter 16, something to do with Stone Cold opening a can of whoop-ass.
Okay, absolutely. All right, so until next week, for Max X, for Ezra Mordecai, I'm Token Tom. We're the NecroCasticon. And another chapter is closed.
Good night!
The NecroCasticon is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network and is written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groveston, Walter Ball, and Azriel Mordecai. Music provided by The Night Keep, written by Daniel Edenfield.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.